It's time for some fresh air. So start packing, put on some sunscreen, and grab your favorite walking stick. This is WTMJ Outdoors, presented by Outdoor Living Unlimited. Here's your host, Steve Scafidi.
Welcome to another episode of WTMJ Outdoors. Always excited to talking about hunting, how we can help those hunters in the woods and do amazing things. Great opportunity. Jared Larson is a marketing manager for OnX Hunts. They do a lot of interesting things, including helping hunters develop strategies, check wind forecasts for the individual stand sites, integrate with cell cameras, the trail cams. That thing is so big now, and using apps and all that stuff. So let's get right into it, Jared. First of all, welcome to WTMJ Outdoors.
Hey, really appreciate it, Steve. Happy to be here and talking to the folks of where I hail from in the upper Midwest, specifically Wisconsin. And, obviously archery seasons have opened up, and hopefully folks are getting out there enjoying the woods and using OnX to be a little bit more efficient with the time they have to get out there.
Yeah, tell me about your company.
Yeah, so OnX was actually founded by a hunting guide out here, just out of necessity to really understand public and private boundaries. That's our bread and butter. Think of it as a digital plat map that's in your hand that's going to give you your real time location, tell you who owns any given piece of property, whether it's the state of Wisconsin that owns it or it's Bob Murphy, and it'll give you his tax address and give you an opportunity to be able to locate his house, knock on doors for permission. But that's, just barely scratching the surface of what OnX does in today's day and age. A digital plat map that gives you all land ownership information really expedites the process of figuring out where you can and can't hunt. And at the end of the day, just instills a lot of confidence that you are hunting ethically and by the law on the right piece of property. So you're not looking over your shoulder or, unsure of where that boundary is if there's no physical fence line.
Yeah, you and I both know when you get in the woods, it's not always easy to tell where one property ends and the other one starts. So this sort of technology, and that's what it is, right? You're using the tools available to sort of sort that out. It just gives you peace of mind when you're in the woods.
Yeah, 100%. And what makes our data unique is we actually have a GIS team in-house of about 50 people that go to every single county in the United States each year. And that's where we get our data from. So, if you would walk into your local county courthouse and ask to see, who owns this parcel or that parcel, that's exactly where we're getting the data from. And the app goes so much beyond that, as you kind of mentioned in the introduction there. We really facilitate a lot of different efficiencies for the whitetail hunter. A couple of my favorite features, there's a feature called Optimal Wind. So we have, of course, custom waypoint icons that you can drop on different tree stands, trail cameras, you name it. And then at those tree stand locations, you can attach the optimal wind for each one of your individual stands. So if your north side food plot hunts best on a northeast wind, you can set that in the app. But if your south side gap hunts best on a south wind, you can set that. And at a glance, let's say you got 10 stands spread across your 150 acres, you can know exactly which stands have good wind conditions for your next hunt. So that way it makes choosing stand locations so much easier.
And the interface, I imagine you've made it easy for hunters to use, right? Walk through that a little bit.
Yeah, so our interface is super simple. We basically have five main buttons across the bottom that allow you to save maps for offline use, so fully functional GPS, even when you have no service, if you just take 30 seconds and save a map beforehand. And then, of course, it gives you options for different tools, like an area shape tool that you can outline the size of your food plot so you know exactly how much seed and fertilizer you need. But it's all on one screen, every button, and the beauty of it is you cannot break it. You might turn a layer on, or you might accidentally drop a waypoint, but you can turn those off, you can delete them. So I always tell people the best way to learn how to use the app is while you're sitting there watching football on Sunday night, spend a half hour pressing every button, trying everything, because you can't break it.
What do you say to those folks? I like it the old-fashioned way. We don't need all the technology. I walk away from that stuff. What do you say to those folks? Because they're your hardest customers, right? They're the hardest ones to recruit.
100%, and I have a lot of respect for those guys. They're typically very competent woodsmen that usually have a wall full of deer. But at the end of the day, the one thing I would tell them is the ability to use our app collaboratively at your deer camp it may not be something you need, but it will allow you to facilitate your knowledge to your kids, your grandkids, your nephews, your nieces, whoever else it might be. And so, you know, rather than drawing a map on a napkin and they turn left at the big oak tree and then they go down the hill 200 steps, you know, you can mark those on your map. You can lay a track with your access and your exit routes. You can put a waypoint right exactly where that tree stand is, and you can share that all collaboratively with whomever it is that you hunt with or your whole camp. And it puts everybody on the same page. You know, somebody that's maybe never been to your property, they can navigate to a tree stand in the dark and not have to ruin their first morning or not go out until daylight, get their hand held to the tree stand. That would be what I say to them is, you know, go empower those other folks in your life that may not be as adept in the woods as you are by using Onyx and really sharing your knowledge through the platform.
And I would share this too with people. I mean, whether you're a great hunter or you're a scientist who has in-depth knowledge of artificial intelligence, there's always something you don't know. There's always a tool that can make you smarter. And Onyx Hunt, I think, is part of that story, right?
I mean, 100%. I mean, there are things in there, like just newly we added a deer movement forecast that's pulling from dozens of different parameters to help those folks that, you know, just like most people in 2025, they might have kids in sports, they're working a full-time job, they're doing this, they're doing that. You know, time is really a limiting factor. And so I think our app really helps folks be more efficient. If they only have 5, 6, 7 days to spend in the woods a year, you know, that's not that many days to fill the freezer. And I think the tools that Onyx provides is going to help you make the most of every sit that you have a chance to go enjoy.
Jared Larson, marketing manager at Onyx Hunt, joining us from Lolo, Montana. Are you kidding me? We'll talk to him about that, what he's doing there, and how he got into the hunting life and some of his personal story. We'll do that on WTMJ Outdoor, sponsored by Outdoor Living Unlimited. Lots more to come. We'll do it after this on 620 WTMJ.
Back to WTMJ Outdoors, presented by Outdoor Living Unlimited.
Welcome back to WTMJ Outdoors. Jared Larson, he's the marketing manager at Onyx Hunt. He's joining us today. Get this, Lolo, Montana. First of all, where in Montana? I've been to Montana. Where in Lolo? Where's Lolo in Montana?
Lolo is all the way west. I'm in the Bitterroot Valley, So I can be in Idaho in about 40 minutes, but just south of Missoula. Missoula is kind of the main town nearby.
And what in the world are you doing in Lolo, Montana?
Yeah, so I actually grew up in Wisconsin, you know, in Waupun, just near the Horicon Marsh there.
Know it well.
Yeah, like many kids at the age of 17, I didn't exactly know what I wanted to do with life, but I knew that Iowa had big deer and I could get resident deer tags if I went to college there. Yeah. So that's what I did. I went to Iowa State to get resident deer tags, and then I ended up using Onyx while I was in college to knock on doors and get permission and things of that nature, and came across a job posting as I was about to graduate. And, you know, at the time, pre-COVID days, it was an in-person gig out in Missoula, Montana. So I packed up the rig and moved west and, have kind of settled into my role here as the whitetail and turkey marketing manager at Onyx. And, you know, it just hasn't been in me to move out of the west. I still usually make a 4-week road trip to go hunt whitetails in the Midwest, starting in the end of October through November. But boy, I sure do love a bugle and elk and being able to chase mule deer and antelope. And thankfully, there are still lots of whitetails in the river bottoms out here.
I love that. So as somebody who does come back to Wisconsin and has hunted for a large part of your hunting life, what's some of your tips, your do's and don'ts for hunters that are chasing whitetail?
Yeah, so I mean, I think the biggest thing that gets overlooked in the whitetail woods can be access. You know, so often you might just, you know, you put a lot of strategy into planting food plots and, you know, hanging good sets and making sure you have good cover and your wind is going to be right for how deer are entering and exiting. But they forget what they're entering and exiting can do and can affect their hunt. Because so often if you have a poor access, whether that's, you know, you're making yourself visible or audible, or of course the worst case, you know, putting your wind somewhere where it shouldn't be going, your hunt ends before it really ever starts. And so really using Onyx in the off season to map out your entrance and exits to make sure, you know, maybe you want to plant some screening cover, you know, like some, you know, Egyptian wheat or something that grows real tall to get in on an access, and then using your Onyx to lay down a track to make sure that that access is not only known by you, but you can share it with your hunting partners to make sure everyone is entering and exiting where they should be. Because, you know, the worst case scenario is you blow out a mature buck that you're chasing and he goes over to the neighbors for a few days and gets whacked over there and he's no longer showing up for you.
Yeah, that's every hunter's nightmare, right? They're showing you the deer that you should have shot, the big buck that got away.
Exactly.
I've been talking to a lot about with hunting guides and hunting just hunters in general, and one of the things I've been asking about is their sort of their favorite thing about deer camp or their favorite deer camp experience. Do you have one?
Oh, 100%. You know, I grew up in you know, steeped in the Wisconsin gun hunting culture. My dad and his twin brother, you know, they're in their 60s, and I think they're on something 44, 45 consecutive years of having camp in northern Wisconsin there. And I just love getting together with the people. You know, growing up, our Wisconsin gun camp was never steeped in big bucks. It was steeped in the camaraderie and enjoying times with, you know, dad's brothers, uncles, cousins. And so really just getting to spend time with folks that are important to you. Of course, you know, I think everyone goes through phases, different phases of life. And I certainly had phases where it's like all I cared about was shooting a deer. And then it was getting a deer bigger than the last deer, you know, and eventually it kind of climbed to finding mature deer. But as I continue to get older, it's much more about the time spent with people that are important to me, a dad, a brother, a really good buddy. And so I think one of my favorite memories was that very first year of gun season when I turned 12 and I could have the rifle in my hands. And I remember clear as day, you know, sitting out there with my dad and shooting my first buck. And those are things that I can't wait to do with my future kids. And I mean, even just sharing those opportunities when introducing a new hunter, you know, there's been different points in my life where I've taken somebody out that, you know, whether they hadn't ever experienced success or it was one of their first couple hunts, you know, carrying on that tradition through others is a powerful thing. And yes, it eats up your time and your energy, but at the end of the day, you look back on those very fondly and knowing that you sparked a passion for somebody else to carry on that hunting tradition.
I love it. And I still hunt with my dad in deer camp, and he's 89 years old, and I've been doing that since I was, I think, 13 or 14. So I share that experience.
And that's one thing, you know, not to get morbid here, but you never know when your last camp might be, given a dad or a brother or anybody. You know, life is not to be taken for granted. Obviously, there's car accidents that happens every day or this, that, or the other thing. But that's something I've tried to live by, especially in recent years, is really prioritizing the camps with the people that matter most, because you just never know when that last deer camp might be with that dad, that brother, that grandpa, that uncle, whomever it is that's important to spend time with for you.
Well said. Jared Larson, I want to give folks a chance to find out about Onyx Hunts. How can they do that?
Yeah, so our website, just www.onyxhunt.com, is a great place to get started. And honestly, if you have particular questions or feature requests or whatever it may be, my email address is Jared, J-A-R-E-D, period, Larson, L-A-R-S-E-N, at onxmaps.com, onxmaps.com. I'd love to hear them. You know, we're a customer-driven company. A lot of our new developments and new features come from customers providing us insights of, man, we wish it did this or wish it had that. Because at the end of the day, we're hunters ourselves. You know, one of our mottos is made for hunters by hunters. And so we love to hear from you guys. So if you have any thoughts or insights, I'd love to hear them. Otherwise, www.onxhunt.com and go check it out. You get a 7-day free trial if you so choose to go download it and if you haven't before.
All right, Jared, have a safe and happy hunt and enjoy the whitetail season in Wisconsin. Thanks for joining WTMJ Outdoors.
Appreciate it. Good luck to all in the woods this fall.
All right, lots more to come on WTMJ Outdoors, presented by Outdoor Living Unlimited on 620 WTMJ.
Welcome back to WTMJ Outdoors, presented by Outdoor Living Unlimited.
Welcome back to WTMJ Outdoors. I'm excited about this conversation. Not that I'm excited about every conversation I do in WTMJ Outdoors. But this one, anybody who spends any time in the woods in Wisconsin, you hear chainsaws, you probably use chainsaws. I've certainly cut enough trees down in my lifetime. And I, when I saw this pitch, I go, we have to talk to author James Card. He's written for the New York Times, Rolling Stone, lots of other publications, New York Times, the newspaper. And the name of the book, James, first of all, welcome to WTMJ Outdoors.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Is Chainsaw Love, which I think is an amazing title. And truly, having read some of the book, you are a guy who appreciates chainsaws, or probably more appropriately, because I've read the book, saws, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Why do you make that distinction between chainsaws and saws?
Well, when you work with guys using chainsaws, it just becomes slang. You say, I'm going to grab my saw. You're not referring to a handsaw or pole saw. It's just saw. I make that distinction in the book. Just in casual conversation, you're talking about saws. Everyone knows that you're talking about a chainsaw.
Yeah.
Maybe in different circles, if you work out like at an almond grove in California and you're using pole saws all day to prune trees, then you're probably referring to a pole saw.
So would you call yourself a Wisconsin guy?
Oh, yeah. I was born and raised in Wisconsin.
Yeah. You're living and talking to us today from an area I know very well, Waupaca County. I hunted Waupaca County. We'll get to that in a little bit later. But so I guess the obvious question that people are going to have or say to me is like, why did you feel like you needed to write a book about the love of chainsaws?
Well, I got the idea. I was in between journalism jobs and I worked as a line clearance tree trimmer. And that is where you're felling and pruning trees near power lines. And the crew was mobile. We traveled all over Wisconsin doing this type of work. Some places were in people's front yards, and other places were way in the back 40, really remote areas. And we used chainsaws every single day. It was our main weapon in what is a war against nature. The trees are constantly growing into the power lines. They hunger for that sunlight. And they develop liens, and every time there's a thunderstorm, you know, the power goes out, and we try to prevent that from happening by being proactive. And working with these guys, everyone used chainsaws on their own during their off time cutting firewood or whatever. And so we were always talking about saws, the pros and cons of all the different types of them, and also their uses. And that's what kind of got me interested in it, was how the chainsaw is one of the most versatile power tools ever invented. If you were to compare versatility with all the power tools in your garage, nothing comes close to the chainsaw.
Well, I was thinking about that because, you know, one of the reasons I wanted to have you on the show, besides it's a great book, is that at this time of year, people are starting to do things in their hunting areas, clearing trees that maybe have fallen throughout the year in bad storms or whatever, you know, maybe putting I often have a side of a ridge, just a ground blind where I used fallen timbers that have been cut for me or I cut. So it's sort of that tool that becomes in really handy this time of year.
Yes, for sure. Actually, it's, in my opinion, it's getting a little too late. Bow hunting already started.
That's true. Yeah, it started last week.
You should have all that work done a month ago or so. But what comes in handy for that type of work are battery-powered saws. There's a chapter in the book where I touch on that. I'm pretty critical of battery-powered saws.
Tell me why. Tell me why.
Yeah, well, they don't compare to the gas-powered ones.
No.
When you want to do real work, by real work, I'm talking, you know, you're cutting a tree that you can wrap your arms around. Then you need gas-powered saws. But there's also the chargeability. If you're in a remote area,
yeah,
you just gas and go all day long.
I want to make sure, because I know you're not promoting one brand or another. Matter of fact, in the book, you talk about Steel and Husqvarna, I think, is two of the big ones that I know about.
Yeah.
But what are some of the basics, before we get to your story, on what people should know about chainsaws, what they should be looking for, how they should maintain them, keeping them sharp, all that stuff?
Sure. Well, with the electric ones, they're really low maintenance. Obviously, for any kind of saw, either gas or electric, you should know how to sharpen them. And in the book, I go off on that a bit about just teach yourself how to hand sharpen a saw with a file. There's tons of gadgets out there for sharpening chains. And all I do is just use simply a round file and do it freehand. And once you get the hang of it, it's second nature, and it's the simplest thing. There's really no reason why anyone should take their chains to someone else to be sharpened. I mean, it's that easy, and it only takes 10 or 15 minutes, depending how long of a chain you have.
Having seen people do this over the years, it's not that complicated. Once you do it once or twice, you've figured it out, and it makes it so much easier to cut wood.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You got to keep that chain razor sharp. And then also you take down the depth gauges. Some people call them rakers. Those are those little bumps that are in between the teeth
right
on the chain. Those, as the teeth get worn down, you take a flat file and you just give it a few swipes. And there's a measuring gauge you can buy to test that. But I just kind of eyeball it. Some guy said like a credit card to kind of get a look on how it should be. But those two things, keeping those rakers down and the teeth sharp, are the biggest. And then with the bar, it's called dressing the bar.
Mm-hmm.
So you pop the bar off, and then you take your bare fingertips and you run it along the edge. And what you'll feel is a burr that runs along the edge of the bar where the chain rubs. Along that gap. And there you just take a flat file and you just take a few swipes and remove that burr until it's perfectly smooth and your chain will run much better in that groove. And then, of course, take something like a dentist pick or something like that and stick it into the groove and rake out all the gunk. And you wouldn't believe what comes out of there.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, chainsaws can be pretty messy. I've run them just completely filthy, and it's a warrior machine. And, you know, it's like a Glock pistol. You just can treat it like junk, and it will still run.
We're talking to James Carr. We've got to take a break. James, I want to continue the conversation after the break. You're listening to WTMJ Outdoors, presented by Outdoor Living Unlimited. Great conversation about the saw, the chainsaw that so many of us use in our daily lives, especially here in Wisconsin, especially in hunting season, or as James said appropriately, well before hunting season, especially now that the bow hunters are in the woods. We'll find out James' story, and we'll tell you how to get his book, Chainsaw Love, after this on 620 WTMJ.
Back to WTMJ Outdoors, presented by Outdoor Living Unlimited.
Welcome back to WTMJ Outdoors. We're talking to James Card. He has written Chainsaw Love. For the folks who are interested in buying a copy of your book, James, how can they do that?
The publisher is the Wisconsin Historical Society Press. And just go to their website, and you'll find the book along with a lot of other really cool books about Wisconsin. They have some really neat books in their lineup. I highly recommend them.
All right, so your story. Tell us your story. I know you love the saw, chainsaws, and you're certainly probably one of the leading experts on them. And the book is amazing, by the way. And if you can get a copy from the Wisconsin Historical Press, please do that. Chainsaw Love is the title. What's your story? How did you get to be where you're at now?
Well, I spent most of my life in journalism. In between journalism jobs, though, as I mentioned previously, I was doing line clearance tree trimming. And that's where I got the idea for the book. So that led me to meeting all kinds of people all over Wisconsin, including one fellow in the Michigan's Upper Peninsula. And he was one of the most interesting characters. His name's Cyrus Johnson.
Tell us about him.
As far as I can tell, he might be one of the top chainsaw mechanics in the world.
Wow.
People send very expensive chainsaws to him for from all over the nation, including Canada, to port the saws, which means he tears them apart and does these modifications to make them run faster and more powerfully. So he can take approximately, this is kind of a generalization, but he could take a 50cc saw and turn it into a 70cc saw. Mm. And it would look, and then when he reassembles it, it still looks like the same saw, but it runs so much more powerfully. It'd be like, you know, the chainsaw equivalent of the Fast and Furious movies.
Right.
Where the cars they drive, you know, on street level, they look pretty normal. But once you get behind the wheel and hit the gas, you know, it's amazing. So that's what he does. Out of his workshop up there in Menominee. And he was really interesting to talk to. I met him at Simco. At the Simco Thresherie, where there was a chainsaw contest for cutting with speed. Mm. So all these chainsaw operators were using vintage saws and some modern ones. It was everything, all kinds of brands represented, including a hot saw division. Now, the hot saws are, it would be like a hot rod class if you were to compare it to a car. These saws had these like giant exhaust forcing cones, and it's kind of complicated to get into, but it makes those engines just really, really rip. And so the contest goes like this. There's a log, and you make one downward cut, and then an upward cut, and then a downward cut. So that would be three cookies, like wooden cookies laying on the ground. Mm-hmm. And as, you do that as fast as you can. So, yeah, these saws tear through a log within, you know, just a couple seconds. It's really amazing.
Before we let you go, Jay, and we're talking to James Card, who's written the book Chainsaw Love. Number one safety tip. You've been around these saws all your life. Number one safety tip for people who maybe have just acquired one, maybe they don't use it that often. Number one safety tip.
Wear chaps.
That's a good one.
Get a pair of chainsaw chaps. But then also all the safety gear, earplugs and glasses. You see so many people like on YouTube and so on messing around with chainsaws, and they're not wearing chaps. And I've had plenty of close calls.
Yeah.
Well worth it.
James Card, a pleasure to talk to you, man. And I can't wait to finish the book. I've read about a quarter of it. Fascinating conversation as someone who's been around these things all my life. Thanks for writing a book, and thanks for being a part of WTMJ Outdoors. Love the conversation.
Yep, thanks for having me, Steve.
Absolutely. You're listening to WTMJ Outdoors. Lots more to come on 620 WTMJ.
Welcome back to WTMJ Outdoors, presented by Outdoor Living Unlimited.
Welcome back to WTMJ Outdoors. This one's an interesting one because I always try to find that outdoors connection. And this is sort of it could be called a stretch, but I'd say we are in Wisconsin. We are in the Milwaukee area for this one. And who better to talk to than Mike Sampson? Why do I say that? Well, he's running the Milwaukee Oktoberfest at the Summerfest grounds in October. And he's got some great presenters and sponsors and music and food and all that. So he is joining us on WTMJ Outdoors. I've never been to the actual, like, the home place of Oktoberfest, I think it's Germany, right? Although we've celebrated in Wisconsin for a long time. Have you ever been to the actual Oktoberfest in Germany?
I'm actually flying there this Monday for my first time to experience it ahead of our Oktoberfest event.
Interesting. I did not know that. So you're going to get the first hand, you get the look. So what are you hoping to experience when you go there and see it for yourself? What are you trying to learn?
Well, our great partner for Milwaukee Oktoberfest, Hofbräu, is putting us up, so we kind of get the VIP treatment in their tent over there. I'd love to see a German castle when I'm there, and then just anything that we can bring back to the city of Milwaukee with regards to how they produce their festival and any fun ideas that we can make our festival better in Milwaukee.
All right, so are you German, for the record?
I think it's in the last 23andMe, I think I was at least like 40% German.
That's pretty good. I had a very slight sliver as an Italian-American. I have a little bit of everything, as you know. I'm sort of the mongrel of Europe. All right, so you don't speak German, I'm assuming.
I do not speak German.
All right. Do you know what the German word for beer is?
German word for beer. I should probably even know
beer.
That.
B-I-E-R. It's simple.
Is it beer? B-I.
B-I-E-R. Just spelled differently, but it still sounds the same. All right, enough of those questions. It's not a test.
Prost, so, celebration. I, those are pretty much the two that I know.
You know, you actually have the ones you need to do this this thing. So for folks who are fans of Oktoberfest and the celebration, the consumption of beer and all the partying that goes with it, what should they expect to see at Milwaukee's Oktoberfest at Summerfest?
Great German food from Kegel's Inn. We're excited to be partnering with Summerfest Grounds kind of to bring us there and produce the event. Like I said before, Hopperl is a great partner. So this is actually the, one of the first ethnic festivals that actually has authentic German beer on the grounds, because if you go to actual German fests, they do not have that. So we're excited to have Hofbräu available, Hacker Shore, and some other offerings as well. But it'll be very community-focused. Families, the playground will be open for the kids. You can grab a beer and watch your kid run around on the playground while enjoying some polka music. We'll have a community stage with German dancing, the Gruber Law community stage. And then our main stage will have table reservations available, as well as a lot of German music throughout the entire weekend. Festival, you know, contests, Miss Oktoberfest, wiener dogs, beer chugging. Everything you need for Milwaukee.
Classic Milwaukee or Wisconsin Oktoberfest. So I'm going to give you a couple opportunities. If folks are interested, and I don't know why they wouldn't be, because it's Oktoberfest at the Summerfest Grounds in Milwaukee, and which is always a celebration. Is there a website? Is there a place to go to for tickets or other information?
MilwaukeeOktoberfest.com has all information. Tickets right now, early bird tickets are $6, so then you can go onto the grounds anytime you want. Nice. We will have free community hours as well. So Friday from 4 to 5, you can get in for free. Saturday and Sunday from 11 to 1, you can get in for free.
And I know that I know this because I know your wife. I know you do a lot of things. So I'm going to give you a chance to just sort of talk about why you're sort of an expert at running these things. Just tell folks some of the other stuff you work on.
Yeah, other stuff. My biggest event of the year is the Shamrock Shuffle in March, so I got a little bit of Irish heritage in me as well, so that carries over to that. Some Christmas events that I do, the Wisconsin Card Show. I'm always trying to think of fun events to do in Milwaukee. Storm the Bastille 5K I produced this past year, so anything that has kind of gone away in Milwaukee, I'm interested in bringing it back, or anytime anyone has any wild ideas of how to make our city better and throw fun events, I am all for them.
I may have asked you this before, because we've gathered on occasion with our spouses at different things. So as somebody who does these outdoor events, what is it about that sort of arena, those things that is interesting to you? Because you organize these things.
Yeah, I think I've always just been a social person. So I've always consumed, done my consumption of beverages and bars and networking and meeting people.
There you go.
Which kind of brings you back to your little podcast episode yesterday of Shrekking and consuming things. But I like getting people together, throwing parties. I was always a big party guy in college, throwing house parties and stuff. And that kind of transferred over to being an adult in life and showing people a good time, which usually involves alcohol in Wisconsin.
In Wisconsin, yeah, you hit the sweet spot there. So, again, for the people who are saying, oh, how is this different than every other Oktoberfest? We have a ton of them in Wisconsin, all the way from La Crosse to northern Wisconsin and everywhere else. What's different or unique about the Milwaukee Oktoberfest at Summerfest that you're organizing?
Well, you get to enjoy the most authentic German food that Wisconsin has to offer with a 100-year-old restaurant from Kegel's Inn. We're going to be right on the lakefront, so you can't get a more beautiful setting. And this was Henry Mayer's dream back in the day. That was original. In 1960, he went to Munich and came back with the idea that hopefully that there's going to be a version of that thrown in Milwaukee and the festival grounds. And that's kind of how the Summerfest grounds began and got started. So we want to really try to grow this event. We have the capacity to do so now. We kind of outgrew our spot at Cathedral Square last year. We're excited to expand and really give the Midwest and Wisconsin a good home for an Oktoberfest celebration.
Yeah, I agree with you on the Henry Mayer stuff. That is exactly, to utilize that great space on a great lake is something that he was passionate about. He was a tremendous mayor, and he's somebody who recognized the importance of getting people together. And this has to be an example of that. And obviously, the German heritage in Milwaukee is off the charts anyway. And everyone ever meet that says, what do you want to know about Milwaukee, or what's the thing in Milwaukee? It's that German heritage, and this is certainly part of that. I'll give you another chance to kind of tell people where to go to find out, how much it is, the dates, all that stuff.
MilwaukeeOktoberfest.com. The dates will be October 3rd through the 5th.
So that's Friday, Saturday, Sunday down at the Henry Meyer Festival Grounds. Parking will be available. Like I said, there's some free community hours, 4 to 5 on Friday, Saturday, 11 to 1, where you get in for free. Kids 10 and under are always free. Otherwise, table reservations are available. VIP packages are available. Just come down and enjoy some nice brats and beer and pretzels and have a good fall day in Wisconsin.
Now, typically I would say at this point, thanks for joining us, and I will see you there. But I'll actually be in Sicily when this is going on. So I will be eating not German food, but really, really good Italian food.
Well, you can't argue with some good pasta and wine as well.
Who doesn't love wine? Mike Sampson, organizer for Milwaukee's Oktoberfest at the Summerfest Grounds. Thanks for joining WTMJ Outdoors.
Thank you, Steve, and thank you, WTMJ.
All right, you're listening to WTMJ, WTMJ Outdoors, presented by Outdoor Living Unlimited. Lots more to come. We'll do it after this.
Welcome back to WTMJ Outdoors, presented by Outdoor Living Unlimited. Country roads,
take me home. As always, thanks for listening to WTMJ Outdoors, presented by Outdoor Living Unlimited, and that sponsorship is important to me and us on this show. But you know what else is important to me is all of you who sort of make this possible. And I have had so much fun in the almost 4 months now of doing WTMJ Outdoors. And we're not going anywhere. We're going to do some really great episodes coming up through the hunting season and winter with the Birkebeiner and skiing cross country and downhill and ice fishing, of course. There's guides and all kinds of cool things we can do with that story. So we're going to continue that conversation. On today's program, though, we had some great, great conversations. We started off with Jared Larson, who is from OnX Hunt, and using technology, they are able to put you in the right place and to give you the opportunity to control your hunting environment, know where you're going, know where you've been, know where the animals are, all of that. Great, great opening segment of the show. Then we talked to, this is one of the most fun things I've done on WTMJ Outdoors since we started doing it. I absolutely love this conversation and hope you did as well. James Card. He's written for Rolling Stone magazine and the New York Times, and he has now created this book, Chainsaw Love. There's a lot of people who get tossed this title of subject matter expert. James fits the bill. He does line clearance for power companies and other organizations where they cut trees down that are potentially falling on power lines and knocking power on, which is never a good thing. But he's taken that sort of job and made it part of a bigger story on just the love of chainsaws, how we use them, how do we utilize them for hunting and land, you know, land maintenance, clearing, especially when you come to hunting season. But as James told us, make sure you do it well before the bow season starts to keep those woods quiet. And really how he became the guy in that industry and a chainsaw expert, as he says, the saw. And we wrapped it up with a fun one with Mike Sampson, who's sort of a local events guy who is putting on a great Oktoberfest in Milwaukee in October. And this is one of those stories that is classic Milwaukee. Great food, great beer, great fun on a great place on a great lake. And that is certainly Milwaukee. So we wrapped it up with Mike Sampson. I always want to say at the end of the show, is first, thanks for listening, as always, on this Saturday. But if you have an idea, topic, maybe a recommendation on an interview guest, send them my way, steve.scafidi, 2Fs1D at WTMJ.com. I'll go slower. Steve.scafidi, 2Fs1D at WTMJ.com. Whatever idea you have, I almost always use those ideas for future segments and future topics on the show. And many of the things you've heard on this program and previous episodes came right from your emails. So keep that coming. I love what I do. I love WTMJ Outdoors, and we're going to keep it rolling throughout the fall and winter here on WTMJ. Thanks for listening. You're listening, of course, to 620 WTMJ.